My name is Nate Pamplin. I'm the policy director for the department.
My name is Owen Rowe, and I am the budget director for the department.
So it's a pleasure to be here today. We were asked to provide a short update on the proviso and then provide an in-depth overview of the department's operating and capital budget. Given where we're at with the agenda and time frame, there's a lot of information that we were planning to present, and I would suggest that I work with Tammy to schedule kind of a second briefing on some of the balance of the presentation. But with the proviso that occurred in the 17-19 operating budget, the legislature provided us $10 million to shore up a pretty significant budget problem statement of about $27 million for this biennium. But with it came some directives, and the directives were to bring a consultant on for an organization and administrative review, to develop a long-term revenue plan, and to do a zero-based budget. As I briefed you in the past on this topic this fall, you all have expressed a real desire to be engaged on the products and development of those products in response to the legislature. But also over the past year plus, I've heard a strong interest in being more engaged in budget development and policy setting of what's in the budget request. And so to do that, we really wanted to provide you some foundational information to help you and inform you as we go in through some of those other processes. So we're hoping today, and coupled with a briefing hopefully in January, but that you'll have a working knowledge of where the department's funding comes from, what restrictions are placed on its use, and how and where we spend it. I want you to be able to have a basic level of comfort to be able to discuss our budget and ask us questions. And again, this will be the foundational pieces for your engagement for the zero-based budget analysis and the long-term revenue plan. And on the long-term revenue plan, I just would offer one comment. We just had our first meeting of our newly established budget and policy advisory group. That meeting occurred on Wednesday, and Tammy provided you a roster of the members of that group. But that was a great team to assemble, and it's going to be a huge help as we work on both of those components of the proviso. But before we go through a variety of fund sources and pie charts and statutes that authorize the creation of accounts or ability to generate revenue, let's not forget that this is about conservation of fish and wildlife and providing sustainable hunting and fishing opportunities and wildlife watching opportunities. So just looking at some of the activities that the department does, we provide hunting opportunities, we recover state and participate in recovery of federal listed species. We have over 80 hatcheries throughout the state providing fish for commercial fisheries and recreational fisheries. And we manage approximately 1 million acres of fish and wildlife habitat across 33 wildlife areas. We're engaged in watchable wildlife opportunities. We participate in the review of forest practice applications. We're monitoring for the aquatic invasive species, and we're engaged in writing hydraulic project approvals. We have over 130 commissioned law enforcement officer. One of their responsibilities is responding to dangerous wildlife interactions. We're immersed in salmon recovery projects. We respond and are at the ready for oil spill response, and we're engaged in fish passage barrier removals. Each one of those activities has several funding sources behind it, and each one of those funding sources has an entire story behind what are the restrictions in place and what we're allowed to do with the funding. Some of them are very flexible. Some of them aren't. Some of them have dedicated accounts. Some of them don't. And so the three main things that we're hoping to leave you with here over the next couple briefings is an understanding of what's in the department's budget, how the budget is established and changed, and provide some context in terms of both the historical perspective but also some recent decisions in our current predicament that led to the inclusion of the proviso in our operating budget. And so jumping right in on what's in the budget, we're going to walk you through a series of lenses today of how you could potentially review the budget. And just for the purpose of today, we're just going to talk about the first two. And then I'm going to jump to later in the presentation where we have a key concept that I think is really critical for the commission to understand that helps explain the budget predicament that we find ourselves in. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Owen to walk us through the different fund sources.
Well, good afternoon. This is intended to be kind of a high-level overview. It might be old hat to some of you, but it's always good to have a refresher, I think. So this slide is entitled Statewide Perspective. I might also think of it as the perspective of the state legislature. When this legislature develops operating budgets, their primary concern and most of their attention is placed on the state general fund. Not surprisingly, it's the largest source of single source of funding in the state budget. And it's also the most competitive source of funding, and it can be used most flexibly across all government activities. The agency currently has appropriated $93.3 million general fund state, and its entire budget is an additional $344 million on top of that. And that's composed of at least 50 different fund sources, and it's probably one of the most, definitely one of the most complicated budgets in state government. Operating budget for the 17-19 biennium is $437.6 million. Put that into context. Yes.
In your pie there, what percent does the general funds make up?
I will get into that in a following slide, but okay. It's right about 21%.
Okay, thank you.
WDF budget is about one-half of 1% of the statewide operating budget. And natural resource agency budgets are about 2.1% of the statewide operating budget. Currently, I think, as far as the amount of general fund that's appropriated to state natural resource agencies, there's 11 in all. It's about 0.7% of the state general fund is appropriated to the natural resource agencies, and that was about double about 10 years ago. So we're just going to go ahead and get into fund sources here, and there's five categories of major fund sources. Trying to simplify this rather complicated budget into five pieces, and then we'll, as I go through each piece, we'll break them apart and show you what they're composed of. Again, Commissioner Holtzmiller, that's the general fund state, or about 21% of the department's operating budget. Next comes the state wildlife account. That's our largest source of state funding. About 10 years ago, those two pieces of pie were flipped. State general fund was a larger piece than the state wildlife account, and it's about the an opposite proration. So it was about 60% general fund state, 40% state wildlife account 10 years ago, and that's now flipped to 40% general fund and 60% state wildlife account. Next comes general fund federal. These are your federal tax dollars at work. I'll get into a little more detail on how those dollars are spent. And general fund private local, primarily funding from public utility districts for fish production related to the impacts of hydropower on salmon and steelhead. And finally, the last and smallest piece of pie, but perhaps the most complicated, are our other state-dedicated accounts comprising about 10% of the agency's budget, and there's at least 25 different fund sources in there. I think, budget staff in the agency monitor at least 50-plus fund sources. We monitor the revenue and expenditures separately, so we've got a lot of good budget detail that we can share with you. So let's start with the general fund state. This is the principal state fund supporting the operation of state government. Primary sources of revenue there are sales tax, business and occupation tax, liquor and tobacco taxes. It's the most flexible fund source in the state and can be used for just about any activity in state government. Next piece is the state wildlife account. It's now the department's largest source of state funding. It's one of the most complicated accounts in the state treasury. I can say that with some confidence since I worked for the House Appropriations Committee for a number of years. This account actually is composed of 26 different fund sources or of revenue, and again, we track the revenue and expenditure separately for each one of those. Primarily, it's supported by general fishing and hunting licenses. And we'll get into what the other sources are in a little while. So when we're trying to really simplify the state wildlife account, we basically break it into two chunks, what we refer to as the restricted and the non-restricted portions of the account. The non-restricted portion was about 70% of the account, again, primarily funded by general fishing and hunting licenses, can be used just about for anything under Title 77 RCW, our authorizing statute. We do strive to use those hunting and fishing license revenues to support those opportunities. And then the non-restricted, the other 30%, is composed of about 25 sources of separate revenue streams and expenditure authority. Here's the detail behind the state wildlife account. So again, recreational fishing and hunting licenses comprise about 68.4. The reason why we're not at 70% there is because at the very top of the screen there, the commercial fishing license application fees, which were authorized back in 2011, and then also some new commercial fees and excise tax related to commercial fishing were authorized in Substitute House Bill, I believe, 1597. That was the commercial fee bill that passed last session. It's important to note that currently also about $1.6 million a year in commercial fee revenues deposited into the general fund, and also the commercial sector also contributes to the landing tax, and that ranges from about $2.5 million to $3 million a year. Background license plates, I'm sure you've seen these around the state, where we've got orca license plates, eagle license plates, bear, deer, and elk. Those are all for separate activities. Personalized license plates, when you have just a plain Washington license plate that you maybe have a slogan on or something else, that goes to support non-game species in the state and the recovery of some of those species. A small, tiny slice you can probably barely see there from firearm permits, which comes from the Department of Licensing. Wild transaction fee, which is the 10% that's applied to license sales to support the vendor that manages the wild system to enable us to sell licenses at point of sale systems across the state, and also provide some support to our licensing division to be able to provide the support to be able to sell those licenses. Discover Pass, a newly created user fee back in 2011, has been a good source of revenue for the operation and maintenance of our state lands. And then two-pole fishing is an endorsement to allow folks to fish with in certain fisheries with two poles and so forth. So you get an idea there that there's just a lot of different sources of revenue and restrictions on how they're used. General Fund Federal, almost $119 million in the 17-19 biennium. About two-thirds of that slice of pie, and we'll go over this in more detail in the following slides, are from formula-based block grants and also from mitigation contracts. We also received some competitive grants from the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And there's also contracts, a small piece of that is contracts to support federal agency work, which would be, an example would be the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service providing us some funding to do some work on examining the white nose syndrome in bats or to do some science on pygmy rabbits in central and eastern Washington.
I don't know, you can't provide an answer for this at this time, but given the budget climate in the other Washington, especially vis-a-vis EPA, NOAA, up there. Have you seen any red flags about that piece of the pie getting smaller?
At this point, I'd say no, but obviously we're always concerned and are working with our federal delegation to make sure that we've got the funding that we need to be able to maintain some of the things that we support with that account, for sure. When we get into some of these block grants, I think a lot of you are aware of Pittman-Robertson. Last biennium, we spent $29 million from that source. That's a federal excise tax on guns and ammunition. And it's apportioned to states and U.S. states and territories based upon the number of hunting licenses sold and also geographic area of a state. About one-third of that there's a recent study that said about one-third of that is attributed to hunting guns and ammunition, and about the other two-thirds are for firearm enthusiasts, related ammunition, and also for home defense. There are restrictions on that fund source. It's to be used for the planning, enhancement, and implementation of programs for wildlife and their habitats, so it's fairly broad. But our primary uses are for game population surveys, the operation and maintenance of our state wildlife areas. We have a little over 1 million acres, I believe, And then we also support our hunter education program with that. Another important source of funding in the agency is the Dingell-Johnson federal excise tax. This was created in 1950 as the Sports Fish Recreation Act. It was to better manage America's fishery resources. It's an excise tax on fishing gear, some fish finders, some electric trolling motors, and some other boat purchases and so forth. Restrictions there are land acquisitions. Land acquisitions. The funding can be used for land acquisition and development, research, sport fish population management, and operations and maintenance of some of our water access areas. And that's basically what we use it for: fish surveys, fish management, and operate and maintain water access sites. Fish production, interestingly, is not an allowable use of that fund source.
So, Owen, first off, thank you for this. This is great. The question that I've always had about Dingell-Johnson and the Pittman-Robertson funds is I understand that they're excise taxes on certain things, and we send them to the feds, and the feds send it back. Do they send it back commensurate with what we send, or do some states win and some states lose in that transaction?
It's a really good question. It's formula based, and so the apportionment is based upon the number of licenses sold, which is kind of an adequate measure of the amount of interest in fishing and hunting in the states and territories, as well as a geographic area. So I think in that way we do get our fair share based upon that formula that's been established by the federal government.
Perhaps I just add, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Baker, that's an excise tax that's collected by the feds. So it's not money that we take in and send to D.C. and then it's reappropriated. They just apply the formula based on the size of Washington, the number of licenses sold. And then there's states that have like a minimum and maximum cap. So, for instance, Alaska, a huge geography, would pretty much will swamp the share. So there's a cap there where they have a ceiling on how much money goes to certain states.
So those are probably Pittman-Robertson and Dingell-Johnson are probably two of the more flexible sources of federal funding in the agency's budget. Moving on to some of the block grants here, Bonneville Power Administration provides us the state quite a bit of money each biennium. Last biennium we spent $24.1 million there. This is all back to the Northwest Power Act of 1980. And the intent of this funding was to enhance fish and wildlife on the Columbia River and its tributaries in recognition that there needed to be mitigation for operation of the federal Columbia River power system. Restrictions there are that any projects approved for funding must be approved by the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. And last biennium, we used that for salmonid population monitoring, hatcheries and hatchery production, fish screens, which are basically machines that help to keep ESA-listed fish out of irrigation canals and into the streams so that they can migrate out to the ocean, and then salmon habitat restoration projects and also land operations and maintenance. Mitchell Act. I should mention that this source of funding, which is provided to the state for to mitigate the federal hydropower projects around and on the Columbia River, has been pretty flat over the past 10 years. And each year we go back to the federal government. We send a delegation out there. We look to get that increase to be able to keep pace with the rate of inflation. We did get a bump a few years ago for hatchery reform, but other than that, it's been pretty flat over the past several years. So our ability to spend that our spending power has basically declined over about the past 10 years. Restrictions there are to protect and enhance salmon and steelhead in the Columbia River Basin, and we use it to produce salmon and steelhead and a mass marking on the Columbia and management on the Columbia River of those species, as well as some research on salmon and steelhead. General fund private local, this is probably the most restrictive part of the agency budget, and this is mitigation contracts with public utility districts, so the funding is coming from ratepayers that are paying their electrical bills. But the primary thing that's funded with this piece of the pie is fish production, again, in recognition that a lot of the hydropower in the state has an impact on ESA-listed populations. At this point, I think it's important to point out that the fish production and some of the mitigation in both the general fund federal and general fund private local benefits all users on the fishery side. That would be tribes, recreational fishers, and commercial fishers. There are some benefits there to all citizens in the state of Washington. And then finally, state-dedicated accounts, the smallest piece of the pie, but also the most complicated as far as the number of fund sources go. And there's at least 25 other state accounts, depending upon what the legislature appropriates to the agency. And I'll apologize ahead of time for the pie chart I'm about to show you to kind of give you an idea of the complexity of that 10% slice of pie. Those are all separate accounts that the legislature appropriates to the agency. Most of these are managed by the agency, meaning that we collect and track the revenue and request expenditure authority from the legislature as needed. This comprises about $43.6 million of our biennial budget. And I'll just touch on a few of these. I don't want to spend too much time covering every single account. But in that upper right-hand corner, the Aquatic Lands Enhancement account, that's an account that's managed by the Department of Natural Resources. Revenue comes from marina rents, from the leasing of shellfish lands, and so forth. We've received quite a bit of that appropriation over time to replace general fund when general fund's been in short supply, primarily to supplant general fund that had previously been used for hatchery production. We also have some enforcement officers that are funded with that to help protect some of the poaching and some of the other criminal activity that occurs around gooey duck harvest and so forth. Many of these other accounts are redirections of general hunting or general fishing licenses, like the Puget Sound Recreational Fishery Enhancement account and the Warm Water Game account. Again, these are all direction in statute. This is not a choice that we have within the agency to fill these pots of money, and they're all appropriated separately in the operating appropriations bill. Many other accounts there, all with very restrictive uses in statute on how you use them. So I'm just going to go ahead and recap here. Again, this is probably the most simple way of representing the department's operating budget. General fund state, again, is the most flexible fund source in the state, used for just about any purpose. State wildlife account, primarily funded with hunting and fishing licenses, but there's 25 other sources as well, from license plates to other endorsements. Federal, two-thirds of that comes to us from block grants and mitigation dollars from the feds with some significant restrictions on it. General fund private local is work for mitigation work for PDDs. And then again, the state dedicated accounts. And I think it's important to note as well that all of this funding has kind of come to us over time by the legislature. The operating budget is built incrementally each biennium. And so while some of these fund sources may be more flexible than others, they're also representative of how the legislature's constructed our budget in regards to staffing levels and the types of obligations that we're responsible to take care of as an agency.
Now that we've gone through one lens of looking at our budget through fund sources, I'm just looking at my watch. I've got enough time to just cover one or two other items, and I'll jump to a pretty key concept I'd like to walk you through. So another way to view our budget is just by looking at kind of the flexible nature of those different fund sources. So here we've provided a spectrum of certainly general fund state and the non-restricted portion of the state wildlife account are the most flexible, and we have the most discretion. Certainly there are obligations and expectations behind those investments, but that's where there's a lot of opportunity given that the funding can be used for anything under Title 77. as we get down to Pittman Robertson and DJ, those federal block grants, those have very broad applications and can cover a lot of activities the department does. However, those do start having some funding strings. For instance, Pittman Robertson can be used for birds and mammals, can't be used for other wildlife species. And then jumping all the way down, even to, yes, this is general fund state, but if it's provisoed for a particular application, that's the only use that we could use. Sometimes you'll see the legislature even include a proviso that says within existing resources, we have to do work. So it doesn't come with any new funding, but we're obligated to accomplish that task. Another way to look at the budget is just kind of considering who contributes to the department's budget. So kind of three main participants, really. It's through fee payers that are buying fishing and hunting licenses or license plates or the Discover Pass. They're buying a specific service or an opportunity from the department. There's rate payers that are purchasing electricity from PUDs or from Bonneville Power, and then that money is contracted back to us to meet their mitigation responsibilities. Or it's taxpayers, either via the block grants of excise tax through PR and DJ, or just other taxpayers like state sales tax, business and occupation tax, or property taxes. So I am going to jump here, hopefully. So with approximately 50 different fund sources, we wanted to leave you just with a really crucial concept to understand the nature of some of the budget predicament that we find ourselves in. The legislature gives agencies authority to spend money via an appropriation. However, they're not necessarily responsible to make sure that there's enough money in the bank to cover that expenditure authority. Certainly over time, they'll look back and try to balance our budget, and we work with OFM to try to match anticipated revenue with our expenditure authority, but that's not always the case. So what does this mean to the department? The legislature can provide authority for us to spend money, and they've balanced their budget, but we don't have the capacity, that is, we don't have sufficient revenue behind it to cover those increasing costs. So let's just go through an example, and that the final budget provided a 2% cost of living increase for state workers. And let's just go through an example of three hypothetical agencies to try to illustrate this. Each agency has $1 million of salaries, and the final budget increase indicates that there needs to be another $20,000 to continue offering all the services that Agency A provided. In this example, Agency A is just 100% funded by state general fund. In this case, the legislature would increase an appropriation of $20,000, and there's no loss in capacity. The agency is flush. Now let's go to Agency B, which is funded by 50% general fund state and 50% by federal grants. They need to come up with $20,000. The legislature provides that $20,000 via $10,000 of actual revenue of general fund state, and then they provide $10,000 of expenditure authority. However, they didn't have the opportunity to go back to Congress and tell them to give, either through that agency or through that excise tax increase, an increase. So the agency is left with a $10,000 gap. Perhaps they could work with that federal agency to try to increase their contract, or perhaps they try to live within their means and do $10,000 less work. Let's jump to Agency C. In this particular example, still $1 million of salaries, but three different ratios of different types of fund sources, and the same thing happens. The agency still needs $20,000 to cover the COLA, but they're only provided $6,000 of appropriation authority and revenue for state general fund, and they have a $14,000 gap spread between federal and whatever that fee-supported account was. So jump to the bottom line. This is what happens to us when we look at 50 different fund sources. And since 2015, so just the past 3 years, there's been $33 million of cost increases. That's a substantial amount of money. As Owen indicated on the earlier slide, we're looking at a $430 million operating budget. We have almost an 8% increase of cost. However, we probably have about half of the revenue behind that. to make up that difference. So each biennium, we're seeing a further and further separation and a decline in services. The $10 million that we received one time for this biennium was crucial for us to be able to help us balance the budget. We did a lot of other things, and I briefed you in Port Angeles about the steps that we've done to balance the budget. But when we look ahead at 2019 and beyond, we continue to have a pretty substantial gap.
I remember Commissioner Wecker making a really good point as we were sort of referring to this as inflation. In a period where there really hasn't been a lot of inflation in the whole economy. So could you just kind of break down some of the major contributors to that increase in our costs, like fish food, things that we don't have a lot of control of. We had staff raises. Anyway, if you could just kind of give a broad stroke.
I think the bulk of this particular estimate is through cost of living increase, salary increases, job reclassifications that occurred. Certainly health insurance and retirement contributions have gone up as well. But then separate from what we're calling...
And I would just note, those are legal obligations because they were negotiated in labor contracts, so...
Yeah. Right, they're non-discretionary cost increases. These are... this $32.9 million is just a result of compensation increases and adjustments, changes in pension contributions and so forth that state agencies now need to cover. I estimate about half of that $32.9 million was backed by revenue, and the other half will either have to cover through fund balance or through fee increases or through some other manner through negotiating with the legislature.
I would just offer that in terms of the budget balancing approach that we had to take for this biennium of $27 million problem statement, about $15 million came from that structural deficit, if you will, that combination of all those central service salary costs and other cost increases. But we also had a pretty significant shortfall to maintain fisheries. Some of that was a decline of federal revenue, a lack of an increase in federal revenue to cover some of those central costs, as well as some new ESA obligations.
So going back to the matrix recommendations of a couple hours ago, one of them is to ensure that all administrative costs are captured and charged to the appropriate funding sources through a cost allocation plan. Is that relevant to what you're talking about here? And does that mean that if we've got to do cost of living increases for some maybe enforcement or something, that we should charge those costs off to each one of these perhaps hundreds of accounts? By FTEs?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Baker, there's probably two different questions that I'm hearing in there. One is the administrative costs, and yes, but a lot of the administrative costs that work in the indirect model are costs that you could not attribute to any particular single fund source. So, for instance, IT, human resources, the director's office, senior managers, they're working across so many fund sources that theoretically an individual could go back and carve out the amount of time they worked on each particular fund source and project and bill accordingly. So what we're doing here and kind of the recommendation in the matrix report is to make sure that we're applying an administrative cost level in each fund source. So it's slightly different than the direct cost that happens when, for instance, an enforcement officer's salary goes up.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman, you mentioned the increased cost due to retirement or PERS contributions. When the PERS folks do quite well in this past year, the stock market's gone up quite a bit. Do you get reduced? If you get asked for more contributions to the retirement PERS matter when it's necessary to cover the retirement costs, do you get relaxed contribution requests when the PERS investments do quite well?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner McIsaac, I don't believe we do. Owen, do you know?
I think that's up to the purview of the legislature, and there's a lot of complexity behind that. So I can't say with any certainty that there's a direct correlation between the activity in the stock market and the adjustments that the legislature makes, because they often also are trying to provide enough revenue for the future PERS retirees as into the future. So often those increased revenues from the stock, if through a good stock market, would be kind of banked for the future, as I understand it. So there's not really a direct correlation there.
Okay, great, thanks. So we have quite a bit of additional material that kind of rounds out an explanation of the department's budget, and we'll try to bring that back to you all perhaps in January. Thank